Our next case is 22-1176, full member subgroup of the American Institute versus United States. Mr. Johnson, you have reserved 3 minutes of your time for rebuttal, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
And Mr. Henderson, you and Mr. Witkowski have divided your time 12 minutes and 3 minutes, correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay. Then we're going to set the clock for you for 12 minutes, and at the end of that, there'll be 3 minutes remaining. There should be 3 minutes remaining.
Your Honor, and may it please the Court. Tom Johnson appearing for Appellant AISC. The International Trade Commission committed multiple errors of law in concluding that the domestic fabricated structural steel industry was not materially injured by the imports at issue in this investigation. Those errors relating to the definition of the domestic-like product, the captive production provision, and pricing resulted in both a flawed and inconsistent record and an unreasoned final views, and if allowed to stand, would prejudice the FSS industry every time it attempts to obtain relief under the trade laws. So I'd like to start, Your Honors, with the Commission's failure to resolve a critical ambiguity in the definition of the domestic-like product. So the Commission provided no explanation in the final views, let alone a reasoned one, for why it accepted material data from NCI and BlueScope that consisted of complete pre-engineered metal building systems, or PEMs, that were expressly excluded from the scope.
Well, now, when you say complete PEMs, are you including kits?
Yes, Your Honor, I think...
That's a pretty important distinction. I think, why don't we, for the purposes of this argument, keep the distinction between kits and finished PEMs and use those two terms separately? Because I understand your argument that the PEMs and the kits should not be distinguished, but factually they are different, and it's important to the way the Commission looked at this case, I think.
Well, I accept that, Your Honor, but I don't want to sort of, without prejudice to my argument, which would be that when you're talking about a PEMS, it's a pre-engineered metal building system. And so we understand that a system and a kit, that those are synonymous terms, and that when the Commission, when Commerce in its scope excluded from the investigation PEMS, it was excluding the system. So it was excluding...
But it wasn't excluding kits, is the argument.
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I think that their argument is that...
I believe that it was or wasn't. I didn't understand.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Our position is that a system and a kit is the same thing.
But when you say system, again, let's take finished PEM, sitting there with the roof on, the walls up, all the structures in place. That is what, at least as the Commission looked at it, that's a PEM, a finished PEM, as opposed to the kit, which is the components that are later assembled by the purchaser on the site, right?
So, Your Honor, I accept there's a distinction. I understand the distinction you're making between the finished building.
Yeah, it would help me at least if you would distinguish between the kit and the finished PEM for purposes of this argument.
That's fine, Your Honor. But from there, I want to get to what my legal argument which is that first of all, the Commission, in note 304 of the final views, which was the sum total of its discussion on this point, it did not make a determination, as you were saying, that, you know, the PEM exclusion was limited only to the final building. And for various reasons, we would say that would not be a reasonable determination. It did not explain why the exclusion would only apply, as you said, to the final building, as opposed to the kit or the system. It, without explanation, permitted NCI and BlueScope to report a complete system. And that's inconsistent with the scope. The scope specifically...
When you say complete system again, do you mean the buildings as after construction, or do you mean the kit?
No, Your Honor, we mean the kit.
Okay, let's use the word kit instead of the word system.
If you prefer me to use the word kit...
It's very confusing to me.
That's fine, Your Honor, but our position, just to be clear for the record, is that kit and system are synonymous.
Okay, I accept it.
Okay, that's fine.
Let's go with kit.
That's fine, Your Honor. So, I mean, in terms of the kit, the Commission in Note 304 does not explain why it permitted, within that exclusion that refers to the term system, the reporting of complete kits. And, Your Honor, if indeed the exclusion was so narrow as to only encompass the completed building, that would be a null set. I mean, no producer involved in this investigation on the domestic side, on the importer side, is shipping complete two-story buildings. So for the exclusion to have any meaning at all, it has to be referring to something less than that, which is why that exclusion uses the word system.
And Your Honor, I understand that commerce excluded in its scope determination did not include the finished buildings. Is that fair?
Certainly the finished buildings are out, Your Honor. I completely agree with you, but they're out in part because no one is shipping finished buildings. If all the exclusion referred to was a completed two-story building, that would neither be imported nor produced domestically in this case. And Your Honor, you know, we've been going back and forth about this for a few minutes, and I think the important thing here is that the Commission didn't even grapple with this. I mean, our first argument in the brief is that this is a State Farm problem. If the Commission truly believed that the only thing excluded from the scope was a completed building, and that therefore the builders or the consumers or the end users are actually the producers of a PEM, then it had a responsibility to explain why it was that it took that position and it failed to do so. And so our first position is that on remand, the Commission should grapple with precisely the kinds of questions that you and I are discussing right now. It didn't do that with respect to PEMs, and it didn't do that with respect to certain steel components for which there was a dispute as to whether or not those non-structural components were included within the scope. And on that second issue, the Commission's failure to grapple with that dispute resulted in an inconsistent record. So it's a case like Nucor Fastener in which the Commission accepted inconsistent data and didn't explain the consequences of that and didn't explain why that was reasonable. You had two producers taking one view of the scope, reporting certain non-structural components. You had a third producer that told Commission staff it wasn't going to do that based on a different view of the scope. That's inconsistent, and it's not sufficient for the Commission to say in note 304 of the final views, well, just trust us because Commission staff looked at it and they determined that this was a reasonable conclusion. It's an unexplained discrepancy in the record that warrants remand. And with respect to the PEMS issue, Your Honor, I mean, this is an error that also impacted a very important issue of first impression for this industry that is coming up to this court under what's called the captive production provision of the statute. So here, the Commission did not engage in an exercise of statutory interpretation at all. What it did was it had a conclusory reference to the statutory language, the key statutory term, production. It then cited to the SSA, which uses the same term, italicizes that term, production. And then it merely asserts that it is not enough for the defendants in this case to aggregate the various steel components of a PEMS and then to ship, invoice, and sell those PEMS. That does not constitute downstream production. It didn't engage.
What is the downstream article in your view here?
So, I mean, I think that the downstream article is what we are calling, with Judge Bryson, a system or kit. I mean, and I think that everyone agrees here there is some downstream article. The disagreement is that under their interpretation of the statute, that the producer of the downstream article is, in fact, the builder. It's the end user or consumer, which doesn't make any sense because that would mean that in order for anyone to get relief under the trade laws for PEMS, the person with standing to bring a petition would be the buyer that would never complain that its prices were too low. I mean, it just turns the entire concept of a producer on its head. And the problem here, Your Honor, as I mentioned, first it's a problem that the reasoning in the final views is conclusory. But there's also a significant Chenery problem here because the only assertion made by the Commission in the final views is that aggregation of parts does not constitute production. The CIT and Government Counsel on Appeal add significant amounts of additional analysis here, citing to different parts of the legislative history, the SAA, to say that there needs to be internal further processing of the components for it to qualify, and that there also needs to be vertical integration. Now, Your Honor, those concepts, which are themselves not self-defining, don't appear anywhere in the authoritative agency's opinion. And so it should not be, I mean, the entire purpose of Chenery is to afford deference to the expert agency officials, not appellate counsel, not the agency's lawyers. And so at minimum, the commission had an obligation to grapple with this in the first instance.
Let me understand something. Your argument is that the pins are downstream articles, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
Well, how can it be a downstream article and also be a like product?
Your Honor, those are two separate inquiries, as I think both the statute and the SAA.
Well, they're contradictory. You can't, and that's your argument. You can't argue both sides.
No, Your Honor. So first, the commission has the responsibility to define the domestic like product. Now, if I'm understanding your question, yes, our first argument is they should not have permitted complete PEMs or what I'm calling kits to be part of the domestic like product. But, I mean, assuming it is part of the domestic-like product, then there's a separate statutory consideration, which is, for purposes of the impact analysis, would you consider PEMs if PEMs are a downstream article? I mean, the entire purpose of this provision is to say...
But it can be both. For purposes of a capped production argument, you can't have an article be a downstream article and then also be within the scope of the like product determination.
Well, Your Honor, I do think initially we are arguing it's not part of the domestic like product definition. But if it is, then it's permissible to exclude it from the impact analysis if it constitutes a downstream product. I mean, I think, you know, what happened
I didn't catch you were making an alternative argument.
Yes, correct, Your Honor, right. Okay. So I think we're on the same page now, right? So the question is, if it's in the domestic like, should it be excluded for purposes of the impact analysis? And if you look, Your Honor, if you read the SAA as a whole, if you look at the Bethlehem Steel case that we cite, what Congress was trying to do was to isolate those cases in which products are competing with each other in the merchant market, not products that never make it to the merchant market, but are sold as part of the market for some downstream article, right? And so that part of the SAA is also in there that they don't cite to. So it's not just
where in the SAA is it, would we look to see the portions that you say are favorable to your view of this.
Sure, Your Honor. They're paragraphs right next to each other. I can get you the page, but it is cited in the government's brief where they, and in a number of the briefs, where they talk about the part of that SAA that mentions vertical integration and internal processing.
Right.
In the very next paragraph, it talks about what the purpose of the
provision. It's in the same section.
The entire section is maybe five or six paragraphs long. And my only point there, Your Honor, is not that this court should be grappling with what, I mean, the D.C. Circuit has called, you know, an interpretation laden with policy consequences in the first instance. My point is that there are two different ways to read this statute. We certainly think ours is much more consistent with statutory purpose to try to figure out which products are actually competing, as opposed to their view, which is that what matters is whatever internal physical or chemical process you're using to produce the downstream article. I think that has no bearing on the statutory purpose. And so in terms of how you identify, how you would interpret those key terms of production and processing, that is something that the commission ought to have grappled with in the first instance. It's not something that the court can credit on such a consequential issue for the first time on appeal. I see I'm eating into my rebuttal, Your Honor. I did want to get to pricing, but if I'm eating into my rebuttal, I'm happy to stay.
You are, but you can address it.
Let me just say a word on it, Your Honor. I mean, this is not a typical case from our perspective, where we are asking the court to reweigh the evidence on pricing. Our position here is that the commission did not engage in the hard work to weigh the evidence at all and reach an underselling determination. Under this court's decision in Allegheny Ludlum, the commission has sort of two options when it's when it is confronted with a data set that it claims has limitations in the record. It can either make reasonable efforts to acquire additional data, which we ask the commission to do, or it can make its best judgment based on the information available. Here, instead, what the commission did was it took each one of the data sets that are going to be used in any investigation involving this industry, and it found limitations in each of them that are going to be endemic to FSS investigations, and it found that it could not conclude there was underselling. That is what we are claiming is error here, was the failure to either collect additional data to complement the data that it claimed was flawed, or to make a judgment based on the record as it existed. There's no further
questions. Your argument almost, I won't say cross the line, but your argument gets very close to the line where you're requesting that we reweigh the evidence, the data here. And you know we can't do that.
I understand, Your Honor.
What we're looking at is whether the commission's determinations are based on substantial evidence. And I think that these issues are unique and maybe even new. I don't see that the commission's determinations are unreasonable or that they're without unsupported substantial evidence. Can just take 1 or 2 minutes and address a substantial evidence issue here.
Sure. I mean, I appreciate that, Your Honor. That's why I started by saying that I thought that there were defining characteristics here that were different than the typical case for reweighing evidence, right? I mean, I'll make 2 points.
An understanding that you may have a good argument. There may be two sides to this story, but as long as the commission's side of the story is supported with substantial evidence, they're going to win.
Well, let me point out I'll limit myself to pointing out 2 items, Your Honor, because I think it's very similar to cases like diamond saw blades in which the court found, there have been cases where the court has scrutinized, for example, a cost analysis and found that it didn't make much sense. I'll limit myself to just 2 quick points. I mean, first, with respect to, the commission's consideration of price suppression and the COGS ratio, which is typically used to identify price suppression, I mean, what the commission says there is that because absolute revenues have increased, that sort of counterweighs the fact that the COGS ratio went up during this period. Well, that's sort of a non sequitur, Your Honor, because it's possible for you to be making more money but not be able to keep up with costs under this profitability measure because of competition from subject imports. So I think that was a non sequitur. But sort of the overarching problem, if you look at how the commission ends its pricing analysis, there's almost a half concession. What they say at the end is, we are not able to find underselling, but we do find that prices here were competitive. But it's unclear as to how they came up with that determination. Why is it competitive rather than underselling? They've just finished telling you that all of these 5 data sets are fundamentally flawed. So in Diamond Saw Blades, it's a similar case in which this court said, if we can't connect the dots, if we can't get from A to B to C, that's a basis for a remand. It's basically a State Farm issue. Thank you, Your Honor.
Counselor Henderson, you have 12 minutes.
Pardon?
You have 12 minutes.
12 minutes. Thank you, Your Honor. John Henderson from the U.S. International Trade Commission. And first, we'd like to note that we respectfully request that this court affirm the CIT's well-reasoned opinion affirming the commission's determination. Now, this was an intensely factual case before the CIT and remains so before this court, and the CIT upheld all of the commission's relevant factual determinations. But the appellant is trying to convert some of these factual issues into legal issues where they don't belong. For example, on the like product issue, the commission did make an unambiguous definition of the like product to be coextensive with the scope as appellant had requested. And it cannot appeal, being the like product determination, being the prevailing party. The issue they are raising here is a data set issue, and that's how they presented it to the commission at the time. Should these questionnaire responses of these two firms, NCI and BlueScope, be included in the commission's data set? And the commission, of course, investigates all questionnaire responses, over 250 in this case, and conducts due diligence examining all the questionnaires, do they belong or don't they? Are there errors that need to be corrected? And in this case, once the issue was raised as these two particular questionnaires, the commission staff did additional due diligence, and it contacted the firms, it instructed them only to include in-scope merchandise in their questionnaires, it got data from these firms about exactly what they reported and what they didn't, it conducted a financial audit of NCI's questionnaire response, and importantly, when it found that one other producer, Nucor, had not submitted a questionnaire response 3 months after the deadline, the commission reached out to Nucor and insisted and obtained a questionnaire response. And the argument that because Nucor's reporting might have done differently the way that the two other firms, NCI and BlueScope, who did timely reporting, that is somehow the commission's fault. If the commission gets an 11th hour response from a producer, it has to do, you know, it has limited time for due diligence. In this case, after the commission staff did its analysis, and found that there was nothing that was clearly outside Commerce's scope, as it explained it both in its final decision and in the scope decision memo, the commission decided to include the questionnaire responses of these firms in its data set, and it explained it in detail in that footnote 304. And first, it clearly understood the issue, which was a data set issue, as Appellant had presented it during the investigation. It explained exactly the steps that the commission took to investigate the supplemental due diligence it did. It explained its decision to include it and its reasoning. And as to the argument about one of Appellant's big arguments at the time was that FSS that needed to be providing structural support to be included in the like product in the scope. And the commission cited the particular pages of Commerce's scope that said FSS does not need to be provide structural support to be load-bearing as long as it's in the structure. So the commission relied on Commerce's scope memo and Commerce's scope in making its decision, and it explained that adequately. Now, the argument that the commission needed to make some sort of formal scope determination, which is up to Commerce, or another like product determination after having fully explained its like product determination, that's unnecessary. It's now the issue that the appellant raises now about the inclusion of this data. One thing I would note in responding to the court's questions about this, about what is a kit. Now, I would note that one thing that, just the reason why the reporting from NCI and BlueScope was within the domestic like product is they were producing FSS components of PEMBs. And now on AISC's reply brief at page 12 says, the commission concedes that domestic producers produce complete PEMBs, kits, or systems, citing our brief at page 29. But our brief does not say that at all at page 29, and we make no such concession. In fact, the record shows that there are that the two firms, NCI and BlueScope, reported to the commission that there were certain components that go in a complete PMB that they do not produce. And the commission...
Doors and windows, for example?
The specific components that they say they don't produce are confidential.
There you go.
And the commission's view stated that when these... when the various components and the kits, incidentally, go in stages or phases. I mean, they sometimes may go as complete kits, but as the components are ready to go. The commission's views stated that when the builder gets the kits, it may include components that receives from a third party. Now, a third party producer of some of the components. So it is not the case that if there are certain components they do not produce, then it's not the case that they produce a complete kit, even though they may ship, components over time that constitute a complete kit. So they are producers of FSS components. They are not producers of complete PMBs, and that was an important distinction for the commission. And because they were FSS producers, the commission had to include their FSS production within the domestic industry. Now, with respect to the captive production issue,
do the producers of the perms, do they also produce fabricated steel?
In our view, or what the commission found was the companies that produce the complete PMBs are the builders at the job site, but the parties that produce the FSS components of PMBs, obviously they produce FSS. There are certain other third party suppliers who may produce other components. Now they may or may not produce FSS, so far as we know. I mean,
part of the services that a fabricated steel producer supplies is erection at the site.
Right. Yeah, and the erection, of course, is a separate service. It is not FSS, and that was an important distinction in the commission's underselling determination, that whenever you're looking at a total bid price, that includes some erection services on top of the like product FSS, and the commission must make its like product determination with respect to respective prices of FSS and disregarding the erection costs.
Do you agree that the respondents actually make these kits?
We were just saying they do not produce complete kits. They may ship complete kits, and kits, as I say, go in stages. Now, whether these third-party suppliers send them directly to the job site or whether they send them to NCI or BlueScope, and for them, NCI and BlueScope to submit them to the job site. But complete kits obviously end up at the job site, but NCI and BlueScope, the record shows, they do not produce complete kits, complete PMBs. They produce FSS components, and that's why they are part of the domestic industry.
And it's certainly conceivable, is it not, that I could order a PMB,
right,
and the kit would have everything I need in it.
Right.
And then the kit gets shipped to my premises, and I hire a builder to put together all those components. So it isn't always the case that there are additional components, I take it, that have to be added to the kit.
Right. There are certain FSS components, and there are certain components that are not FSS or not in scope, like doors and windows.
But there could very well be a situation, I would suppose, in which I would order something that didn't have a need for doors or windows, and when I put the building up, I'm not going to have doors or windows. It's just a very simple structure like a carport or something like that. That would be, the kit would have everything in it that needed to be used in the construction of that PMB, right?
Right. Now, whether the kit would all come from...
But it could have the entire thing, and you would still include the kit within the domestic like product.
Well, assuming they were all FSS, if there are non-FSS components, that's not part of the like product.
All right.
And on the captive production issue, the statute is clear that the domestic like product has to be internally transferred for production the first substantive criterion of the statute, rephrasing it, says processing, and that's in the statute, which we quoted in the views, into a downstream product. And here, there wasn't any internal transferring for production, or the commission found that all that happened was that after the NCI or BlueScope produced the domestic like product, they aggregate it and send it as is, without further processing, without further production of a downstream product, and send it off to the job site where the builder, produced, assembled the complete PMB. And that commission finding was supported by substantial evidence, and we think the statute is clear that if all the producer is doing after it produces the domestic like product is aggregating components and sending them as is, that does not constitute production of a downstream process or processing of it into a downstream product as the statute requires. And in terms of arguments about the congressional intent, the important thing is is the statutory requirement in the threshold condition satisfied? And if it's not satisfied, you don't have to go beyond it to figure out, well, what was Congress's intent for the overall threshold provision? I mean, Bethlehem Steel deals with the third criterion of the statute, which has since been repealed.
I take it that the Commission's position on the legal effect of the SAA is that it is effectively statutory in nature by virtue of 3512D, is that it?
That is
3511?
Correct.
All right.
So
you might as well treat it as a statute, and given that Congress said the SAA is binding authoritative.
Yes.
Okay.
And with respect to the underselling issue, we feel that the Commission appropriately considered all the limitations that it identified in each data source when conducting its analysis of the record as a whole. If you find that a particular data source is serious, you know, is not probative because of data inconsistencies, errors, very low coverage, or lack of comparability, those problems don't disappear when you look at the record as a whole. So the Commission has to consider those, you know, what it has already analyzed as to each data set when it considers the record as a whole. And in terms of the underselling determination, as we pointed out and the CIT judge noted, the holding of Allegheny Ludlam was confined to, the Commission's application of the rather narrow product line statutory provision, which is not at all applicable here. But what the court said in Allegheny Ludlam is that the Commission must conduct active and reasonable efforts to collect relevant data. And it certainly did that here. This court also said something similar more recently in the Hitachi Metals case. And by any standard, as the CIT found, the Commission conducted a reasonable investigation, and all its data requests were reasonable. And you can't just turn this into a completely results-oriented approach. If the Commission makes reasonable data determinations, as the CIT found, and then collects voluminous data, and at the end of the process, it analyzes all that data and finds that it does not support a affirmative finding of underselling, you know, that's the nature of an investigation. You collect all, you make reasonable determinations, you collect the data, you analyze it, and then you see whether the data supported or not.
Counselor, I think we have your argument on that. You're out of time.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, and may it please the Court. I'm Daniel Witkowski on behalf of Cornerstone Building Brands. I'd like to clarify a couple of questions that were asked, and I think Mr. Henderson was also a little bit reluctant to answer some of the questions because of, you know, it dealing with our data. But Doors and Windows petitioner in the proceedings before the Commission described complete pre-engineered metal building systems as including the structural components and then
all confidential.
No, that's not confidential. And what I was getting to is that BlueScope and NCI do not produce doors and windows. So we are not producing all of the components in a kit. So going to the scope exclusion itself, the scope exclusion defines a system and then says systems is a complete building. So the system is defined as a building in the scope language itself. It refers to these MBMA standards in the actual scope exclusion itself. As the CIT noted on this is appendix page 31, petitioner had noted that the MBMA standards apply to finished buildings, whereas the actual components are subject to a different standard. So the scope exclusion is including standards that apply to a finished building.
Finished as in?
As a standing building. Exactly. But even if you did with a kit, the exclusion would still require production of the complete kit, which NCI and BlueScope don't produce those either. They are using components that are produced by other parties. We're producing the FSS components and sending it straight to the job site as is. The Department of Commerce, on the basis of an argument that was made by petitioner, found that the FSS components, even when they're sent to a job site to be incorporated into a pre-engineered metal building system, are within the scope of the case, and since the scope and the domestic like product are coextensive, they're part of the domestic like product. So the Commission's sort of faced with this thing of the FSS components that are going to the job site are in scope. Well, what is then the out of scope item? What has to be then the finished building, because the only thing that we're doing is we're taking FSS off the production line and we're sending it to the job site, just like the product that was coming from Building Systems to Mexico, that was the imported merchandise that Commerce found to be within the scope of the anti-dumping investigation. So, you know, petitioner is really trying to have it both ways as to, you know, how they're treating that exclusion, where it's extremely narrow and doesn't really have any meaning for when it comes in across the border. But when we're doing the same thing that Building Systems of Mexico is doing, they want that to be treated as somehow outside the domestic like product. There was a question about erection services. I think the commission found, it's fully supported by the record, that the FSS component producers for pre-engineered metal building systems are not doing the erection themselves. The erection is done by third-party builders, so it's not something that we are providing that service in the vast majority of instances. There could be some rare circumstances where that's not the case.
That's one clarifying question. Sure. So you disagree that respondents are making complete kits in the first place, right? Like, that's your...
Yeah, that's correct. If you read that scope exclusion, petitioner is very clear that you had to produce the entire kit. Well, if it's the entire kit, even assuming it's a kit versus the finished building, which our position would be that it's the finished building, but even if not, NCI and BlueScope do not produce all of the elements for the kit, so you can't produce an excluded item if you don't meet the actual limitations of the exclusion.
Well, now I'm confused. Thank you for asking that question, because this surfaces this distinction between, is it your position, or let me put it this way, is it the commission's position that a kit that is not the assembled building, but that happens in a particular case to contain all the parts that have been ordered and that will make their way into the finished building, is within or outside of scope? Or the domestic-like product.
I understand the commission's decision to be that the actual finished building is the builders that are
so
producing
the
excluded.
If I'm a FSS producer and I produce a kit that has a bunch of parts, and those parts are the only things that will be used in the finished building, that kit is not excluded from the scope of what Commerce defines or the domestic-like product. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's correct.
So all the talk about whether there are additional things that are added and so forth, they're essentially irrelevant.
They are irrelevant, except to the extent that you buy this argument that, well, clearly the commission violated the scope language, even under their interpretation. They would require a violation of the scope language, again, under their own interpretation.
Okay.
So I also wanted to point out one other thing about the, there was a question, and I recognize that I'm over time, but just to clarify one legal point, if I may, of the SAA does specify that the downstream product has to be an out of scope or beyond the scope of the domestic-like product in order for the captive production provision to apply. So if the commission finds that these components that we're producing are within the domestic-like product, as are the kits, then the captive production provision is not relevant, and that's stated specifically in the commission's views. That's at appendix 8800. Where they've made that query about the SAA, saying that the downstream product that has been processed into the downstream product, that downstream product must be outside of the scope of the domestic-like product. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Johnson, you have 3 minutes of time.
Thank you, Your Honor. Let me just start there to avoid confusion. So, I mean, I think, you know, where the confusion may be. I mean, the domestic like for purposes of the captive production provision can be internally consumed. Yes, the downstream article then would be something that's different than the domestic like. But our argument would be that either these components should not be considered within the domestic like, or if they are, they should be considered internally consumed for purposes of creating a different downstream product. Judge Bryson, I want to get to this colloquy that you've had now with counsel on the other side about complete PEMs. I think there's agreement as to what factually has occurred here, which is these producers often will aggregate and sell and ship and invoice all of the components that a builder would need to produce a completed building. The only exceptions to what they manufacture internally are things like doors and windows. So I take their argument to be that similar to how, to saying like if Microsoft, you know, Microsoft does not produce a computer because it happens to contain an Intel chip. I mean, as we would say, Your Honor, to say that it's merely the fact that you're sourcing a couple of non-steel components from some third party, that that means that you're not the producer of the PEM kit, and therefore you are outside the scope of this exclusion. That again would mean that that exclusion is a null set. It would mean that the only producers of the buildings are the end users or the builders, and it would mean that nothing is excluded. Now, but at minimum, Your Honor, rather than this court go back and forth on these things, our argument at bottom is that Note 304 says nothing about this. The three pages of the scope memorandum that they cite to says nothing about this. And so this court should remand for the commission to provide a reasoned explanation as to why these PEM kits are inside or outside the scope. I'd like to just read the scope language here, which I have, because I think it is not the case that this unambiguously only applies to metal buildings, quite the opposite. It's pre-engineered metal building systems, Your Honor. So again, Judge Bryson using that word systems, which are defined as complete metal buildings that integrate steel framing, roofing, and walls to form one pre-engineered building system that meet Metal Building Manufacturers Association guide specifications. So it's
where are you reading from?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
It's Commerce's scope.
This is the scope. It appears on Appendix 8363.
Okay.
And I also want, Your Honor, for the record, the SAA language is pages 852 to 53 of the SAA. I don't believe it's in the joint appendix.
All right.
But again, our reading of that, and the only reading that I think gives the scope any meaning, that is what is excluded, is the system. Yes, it can be assembled into a metal building that meets manufacturer specifications, but that what actually is being excluded is the system or the kit itself. I'm over time. May I have one more minute on the captive production provision, Your Honor? So I just wanted to respond to an argument there about congressional intent. So, I mean, our position here is not that you jump over the text of the statute and you get to intent. Our position is that both the statute itself, and as you said, Judge Bryson, the authoritative interpretation, the SAA, it contains broad language like production, process, vertical integration, that the commission, if it's going to have an authoritative interpretation on this, ought to consider in the first instance. I mean, just to consider one example, I mean, they sell these PEM kits in a very different way than the typical multi-bid FSS process. They sell them to affiliated builders. And so what is the relationship between them and their affiliated builders? Would that meet the SAA's test for vertical integration? That is something that was not considered by the commission because the vertical integration standard was introduced by appellate counsel for the first time on appeal. And so it's a classic Chenery issue in which the commission ought to consider these things as an initial matter.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We conclude the arguments this morning. We thank all the parties for the arguments, and this court now remains in recess.